Good morning! I'm Steve Whitmire, and you're listening to the Too Much Scrolling Podcast. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for May 2nd, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, you are here live in studio.
Well, that means sounds better, Steve.
It does sound better.
It means that sound is going to be better. It is a superior show.
Because I've moved your microphone like 7 times since you sat down.
Of course. That's why everything sounds so good.
Microphone management. That's the name of the game here, sir.
We have engineers. They help us, Steve.
The engineering department here in the studio has moved your microphone 7 times.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You, sir, you see some very interesting films that are not on most people's radar.
Well, this is a film that I saw the preview for a few months ago, and I said, oh, I should see this film because it looks pretty good.
Yeah, this one is called Polite Society, and I agree with you. The trailer on this one, this looks like a fun action ride.
This is The Wrath of Khan, Steve.
That's a different movie.
Oh, no. This is The Fury of Khan.
Tell us all about this one.
All right. So we have a Pakistani family in England. I think it's in London.
Very English film. Yes.
Very English. Yes. This is a true comic book film. Like all those comic book films that you've enjoyed. But you know what? It doesn't have to be Marvel. It can just be something else.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a lot fresher than a Marvel film because they've got sort of a way they do things today. There's a very playful element to this. This is a sister who wants to be
a stunt person.
She wants to be a stunt person, Steve. She's using social media to promote her desire to be a stunt woman. So she keeps sending this famous woman an email every week saying, listen, I'm getting so much better at it, but she's kind of failing at it. But she really wants to be a stunt person. The schools that they go to, well, it's kind of heightened. It's kind of, they got the mean girls there. They've got, you know, just all the things you have going on in teenage life. But we find out the sister who is going to art school, well, something is going on. She has met a man, and maybe things aren't on the up and up. I know. There's a wedding that's going to be created. There is all sorts of fun things that kids do. There's a lot of, I don't know, teenager British type stuff going on. And yes, it's silly. It's fun. It's kind of like Quentin Tarantino without the harshness of it. This is lighthearted, fun adventure. I would say it's family style. This is not going to change anybody's life. I'll say that 65 out of 100 because it's fun. It could be better, but go with it. It's there to enjoy. And of course, this is kind of like Frozen. You got the two sisters. They're going to tag team. They're going to make it happen, Steve.
This made me think of the Ms. Marvel series where we get that cultural piece. These girls have a culture, and their mesh of their culture with the British culture is on display here.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that you could say about it. I thought of Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm. There is that element. I see that too.
Because it's divided into chapters. And like I said, there's a playfulness to the delivery of the story. And I like the director's choice. The costumes are cool because they're not American costumes.
Mm-hmm.
The story is cool because it's not a Hollywood story. There's a lot to kind of just go through. And like I said, this is not some heavy story. It's a comic book story. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is not based on any comic book, but I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's just, there's good guys, there's bad guys. the evil mom makes things go, you know, happen. The no one believes the kid because it's a kid. The use of social media and how it kind of, you're talking to the world, this idea of you're not being really understood, or that you take these risks that everybody looks at like, why would you do that? What in your head said that was reasonable to do?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you've got your buddies who have your back because you've got your tribe, and how that kind of works into your school and all that other stuff. Once again, it's a very playful, fun movie. I certainly would recommend it to any family with teenagers or above that just wants to see a kind of a fun little story. There's good guys, there's bad guys, there's an ending, they tie it up with a bow, and there's a Thunderbird, a Ford Thunderbird, that's in this film also.
There you go. You also made it to the Goodman Theater this week in our Adventures in a Black Box segment.
Well, dearest Steve, when one goes to the theater and seeing a production of The Cherry Orchard, that is the final statement of a director who wishes to make a statement to the world.
This is Chekhov's finest hour, right? This is The Cherry Orchard, the 120-year-old play about class and culture.
Steve, it is a 120-year-old play. Its delivery is 120 years old. This is, it sounds like maybe something that the director wanted to present. It is this director's final production for the Goodman Theater, Steve, here in Chicago.
So tell us about The Cherry Orchard. This is a play that a lot of people know about. I honestly don't know the story of this one.
All around me were people who said, oh, we read this in school. I read this in college. I read this in high school.
Huh.
And of course, Steve, I grew up in North Carolina. I'm not even sure we read things down there.
Much less Russian plays.
Oh, of course. No Mayberry in this one.
No.
No Mayberry in this one. No Andy Griffith, no Barney Fife here. Steve, this was truly of the Russian world. This is before the Russian Revolution, Steve. Mm-hmm. The aristocrats are totally out of touch with society. They are in debt up to their eyeballs. They could lose the farm, Steve. They could lose the farm.
Do they have to put on a dance contest to keep the evil industrialists from taking the community center?
Exactly. They're going to turn they're going to turn into a shopping mall. And what they need is a community center, Steve. They're going to have a breakdancing moment in the middle of it. Absolutely not. This is before the Russian Revolution. This is before the Communist Revolution. And this is, I'm certainly, a critique of what was going on at the time. The aristocrats just have no clue mm-hmm. on how to run their lives. They're so divorced from probably what originally set them up as aristocrats. And basically, the lady who owns the cherry orchard is constantly just giving away her money. They have no money. That, you know, they're eating very little food. The servants are eating very little food. The servants talk about how they don't know that their life is a good life. They have no other life than to serve mm-hmm. these people. The young people are aware of what's going on, and they recognize the cluelessness of the brother and sister who, once again, own this cherry orchard. They have a person who is providing them with knowledge on how to get out of this. Like, if you take this path, all will be well. And the path is, what if we tore down the cherry orchard, divided the area into plots, and built summer cottages on it? We could raise $50,000, pay the taxes, and also keep the place. And of course, constantly, they're like, silly, silly bourgeois man with your silly, silly idea of like, somehow this is the answer.
We can't part with the cherry orchard. The cherry orchard is very important to us.
It might mean something meaningless, just like the money that is meaningless. If only everyone else lived our life that didn't, you know, I don't know, just was divorced from reality.
Hmm.
So the entire first act is this setup of what's going to happen. And we learn that the business guy that is, or the attorney, is not a very educated person. He's made the proposal. He does have the solution on what to do. And he has consistently been turned away. Like, we will not listen to this nonsense. How dare you come and say this kind of crazy stuff? It's trying to, and I think the director is trying to create some kind of parallel to our society and maybe some things going on here. Let's just kind of divorce ourselves from that for a second and move on to second act. Where the
because you came back for the second act.
I did. My neighbors, the two ladies beside me, did not come back for the second half. Because I was there the entire first half with my mouth open going, oh my God, this is so old.
Mm-hmm.
And this is being delivered in the, I don't know, the classic way.
This is very important, this literature, right?
Oh my God.
No, maybe not.
Oh my God. It is certainly of its time.
Second act.
Second act, I'm there. What do we learn? Steve, when you're starving and things are going to go to hell, why not throw a party? And that's exactly what they did. They invited the orchestra that they could hear across the field, Steve. They practiced over there. They came over. We have no money to pay them. Why not? They're enjoying themselves. Let's drink. Let's dance. Let's have a good time. And then the auction takes place, and they get back from the auction, and the reveal is that the business guy, the bourgeois man, the guy that came over as a slave to the property, that has built himself up from nothing, has bought the property. And he goes, I've owned this property. And the aristocrats recognize, oh my God, I've got to move out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, how sad our life is that we have lost this cherry orchard. And the business guy is like, well, I showed you the path mm-hmm. to keep this. You ignored me. It went for auction. I decided to buy it because I know this property.
And I know the path to be sufficient here.
And Steve, he's going to tear down the cherry tree, cherry orchard. He is going to divide it and build summer cottages.
What a great idea.
And it's going to pay for itself. And he spent roughly, it went $50,000 is what he said. He bought it for $95,000. And that means he still has to develop it, so he probably has to put another $50,000 into it.
Okay.
This is historically how it was kind of worked. As soon as people who felt they knew best and, you know, felt entitled to something
mm-hmm.
lost it. They mourn the old times, Steve.
Mm-hmm.
But this new person comes in and says, well, this is how we can make it industrious. Now, what we know that the play doesn't recognize is that the communist revolution is coming. And yes, he may do that now, but it will all be taken away. And this is just, I think, a play of that kind of disconnect with having this idea of the future in our minds. But the original production couldn't have had that.
Right.
So it was saying something. I think the director was trying to say something about today's society. Okay, let's just go with that. I don't think that is very strong, but I understand why they feel like they would want to say that, or that the director would want to do that. The Goodman puts on great plays. The season has been excellent so far. This has been a production of a different time. Hey, Steve, like Pam coming to see us, one day I will be learned, and I will truly appreciate this dated production.
Today was not the day.
Well, should somebody go see it? Absolutely. They're like, people are going mad about this. And they are. I mean, you go and look at the reviews.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm with my mouth open going, oh my God, it's not like we're going to go see some, you know, Greek performance of Homer or something like that. This is of the time Sir Arthur Conan Doyle type mm-hmm. stuff. It is of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the production is of that time too.
Okay. That's
so lovely.
Not a great review, but I'm glad that you went and you saw.
I would say 60 out of 100.
That's pretty good.
Of course.
All right.
Book it.
Book it. Brings us to our book, and our book of the week. Oh boy, let's talk about customer service for a while, Chip.
Well, I think that's an area that we all could learn a little bit from.
And I think that you and I both are pretty good at customer service. We are pretty good at positioning ourselves to care about our clients.
We like to think we are.
Maybe.
And we make the attempt to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is one of the disconnects, certainly after COVID, that we're running into, is we are accepting subpar service. We're accepting subpar quality, knowing that we went through this period of time where things were shut down. And I think the wake-up call right now is to recognize that there was a level of service and we need to rediscover this.
And businesses are certainly going to suffer without customer service.
Absolutely.
I'm sure of that.
I work with professional organizations all the time. People work with me, and I recognize some of the shortfalls with me, and I certainly recognize the shortfalls with the vendors I'm working with. And I have been kind, and I can, listen, I have a deep voice. I can be forceful. I can make things happen. I can make people been to an area that, you know, they go above and beyond because I've forced them to.
Mm.
But the problem with that is you do that all the time and they just ignore you. So I will go to bat for clients and do what we have to do, but you cannot immediately escalate things to like, give me your manager.
Right.
Every moment, because like I said, you will be immediately dismissed. Like, you're a problem, go away.
Right.
But you need to know how to push to make things happen. That's what they hire you for.
So to that end, you've read a book this week called Be Our Guest, Perfecting the Art of Customer Service, the Disney Institute Leadership Series. This was published in 2011, which really was a different time. Things have changed a lot in the last 12 years. But the idea of customer service and serving your clients is incredibly important.
It is the gift we give. It's the gift the American gives to the world, because we do customer service here incredibly well. And while certainly there are maybe more sophisticated ways of doing it, for the everyday person, we can not just meet expectations. The goal with Disney was to exceed those expectations, to make something memorable that may not be pleasant. Not everything in the world is pleasant.
Hmm.
So there's a way of dealing with that too. I'm going to back up real quick and mention to you that the Disney Institute does travel. I mean, many community colleges hire the Disney Institute to teach a course.
Hmm.
It may be a one-day course or a weekend course, or maybe, you know, a full-time course. Many of our largest corporations have sent their representatives there with the idea of adopting how Disney has developed their customer experience. And so they use all sorts of special rules and how they acknowledge people. You're not an employee, you're a cast member, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not your uniform, it's your costume that you're wearing.
Okay.
And they talk about how to do things in a way that you can try to anticipate what the customer wants. And when you do that, then you can set that up so that you can meet that expectation. And then once again, the idea is to exceed that. So when you walk into Disney, you have an expectation in your mind. Why do people keep going back?
I think that it comes down to that personalization, that event, that moment that you have that is special to you. And I think that Disney, the corporation, is focused on how is that one individual going to have this experience in our facility.
Sure. And they have many of the best brands out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've talked about Star Wars. We've talked about, you know, the Disney movies. We've talked about Pixar.
Marvel, the Muppets. They've picked up up so many of these brands and made them so personal for me.
And they, ESPN, mm-hmm. which is the network, they have Disney programs that go through in the Disney Plus app. They have the parks situation. They have cruises. I mean, they're involved in so many areas. They talked about areas they're not involved in, and this, once again, from 2011, banking, car purchasing, stuff like that. But, you know, from the time you arrive down to Florida, and they, at the time, whisk you from, your bags are taken to your hotel, mm-hmm. you are taken to your hotel in a different vehicle, different type of experience. You arrive, either your bags are already in the room or, you know, however it is. Mm-hmm. You arrive to the hotel. They take you for a tour of the hotel. That cast member comes in and says, hey, listen, before we get started, and we want to welcome you for being here, anybody thirsty for something? Grab some of this. Let's take a little walk around. Let me show you what's available to you. And we, you know, you want to set up reservations? We can make sure those happen. Mm-hmm. You know, this is where you're going to pick up the tram that's going to take you over to the parks. This is how you go to the pools. If you want to come back and, you know, this is not about, you tell somebody, they will make sure this happens. Mm-hmm. In fact, one of the little stories they talk about is that many people who go to the parks, you know, they're real excited. They arrive, they've driven to the park, they've parked somewhere, they've taken a little bus over to have them drop them off in the front of the park, and you're getting ready to leave because it's midnight and you're tired. Oh my goodness, I forgot where I parked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that was a real issue because there's a lot of parking.
Yeah.
So they
were in the itchy lot.
So they had to come to a conclusion on
yeah.
that. And what they determined was, if you can tell us roughly the time that you arrived, we'll tell you roughly where your car is.
Wow.
And we'll take you over there. So you arrived at 9 a.m. Oh, well, John was picking up from, I don't know, Sneezy's lot, row 12. I'm just throwing a number out there. They can take you over there, and mm-hmm. that may be where your car
is. The right zone.
And so that is forward thinking, and once again, making sure that experience is there.
That personalization, that experience that that person has that day. I think of the cruises. You mentioned Disney Cruise Line.
Okay.
Going on a cruise, so many of the cruise lines have that personalization, like you mentioned, making sure that your experience from the beginning has everything that you need. Disney does that on so many different platforms.
Now, we could call it a punching bag, too, because the reality is it's not real, right? Sure. It's not reality. Yeah. You go to Disney, they've designed it so that they know that, I don't know, was it 27 steps? Is how far you would go for a trash can. So they make sure they have a trash can every 27 steps.
One of my Facebook friends is the guy that photographs the trash cans at Disney. That is his hobby. And he's renowned internationally for being the Disney trash can guy.
Well, they've designed them this way. Yes. So that they are as far as you're willing to go. By the way, the beauty of Disney doing all these studies is that you can just, you don't have to do the studies. You can just pick what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Trash is delivered underneath the city because the park's actually built above it. Mm-hmm. The park's on the second floor. And they know how to keep it clean. They know they have, you know, they know the level they need to maintain the facility to maintain this perfect illusion. I mean, as wonderful as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
They use a story that also is, you know, you're at the park, and what if your child gets sick? I mean, it happens, mm-hmm. right? Well, that's a terrible day. And so what they do is they whisk you off back to your room and stuff like that. But, oh, look, there's a Pooh Bear on the bed and with a letter from Mickey saying, we're sorry all this happened. Enjoy the movies that are available to you. Enjoy room service. Mm-hmm. This idea of make the best of a bad situation. I think there's a lot to glean from on how to communicate, how to, you know, how to point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You don't point with a golf club or something. You use your hand. And where do you keep your hands? How do you address a customer? They talk a little bit about when they hire. And by the way, when I used to do the leadership week down at, during spring break for the college students, we did have one of the former park managers come in and give a, I mean, he was in charge of the parks and client experience and stuff. And he talked about their hiring was the most important thing that they do. Mm-hmm. And he goes, listen, I've got the best person who can engineer roads. I've got the best person who can put together the right retail experience. The area that I need to focus on is how we hire. Mm-hmm. And so in this book, they talk about the building that you would go as an HR. You're going to work for Disney, right? And so it was designed by a famous architect. And the architect decided that when you walk into the Disney building for your interview, well, you're not going to meet a person at the front of the building. You're going to have to meander through the building. So you arrive at the front of the building. You're walking through. There's a history of Disney all around you. There are very detailed things telling the story of how this company was built. You get to the back, but the receptionist is on the second floor. So you have to meander through to get to the receptionist to get to your interview. And that is an example of the level of thought that Disney has put in to hiring the right people. Mm-hmm. They talk about how to teach the people about what's appropriate to talk about, what's not appropriate to talk about, how we should address our guests, because they're not customers, they're guests. Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to maintain an above average experience? It's not enough to have you show up and have your expectations met. It's about exceeding those expectations.
And I am so full of pride when I think of all of my students who are currently Disney employees and the joy that they exude in this job. They treat their employees so well. They love the whole experience, being that customer service person, being that special, be our guest for that moment for those people.
Well, what you're hopefully going to learn from this book is how to take their approach to service and bring it to your own industry. So whether you're a school teacher or you work for a bank or you work for, I don't know, just name anything that a customer would arrive. And once again, you're not just there to meet their expectations. You're to exceed them. What can I do to make things easy? Mm-hmm. Now, why I think this book was very important for me to read is COVID, once again, has certainly changed. You know, when things are not arriving on time, when things aren't put together with the same level of care that they were put together before, mm-hmm. when, you know, chips are not put in cars and all sort of challenges that we've dealt with, young people are struggling with this. Mm-hmm. They recognize the wonderful part about experiencing a Disney. What they don't realize many times when they're working for a company is that it's their job to give their clients, the people coming in that are paying their salary, those same type of experiences. And this is why people pay for expertise. They pay for experiences. When you go to the law office because you need to hire an attorney to do something, you want to feel that they're competent. You want to feel comfortable. You want to feel that they're listening. You want to feel that everything that they need as far as a client is being met. And then once again, at the end of it, even if it's not the same experiences the solution isn't something that they want to accept, because sometimes things like that happen. Mm-hmm. What can you do to make that experience, you know, life happens. Mm-hmm. What can we do to make the experience as good as it can be?
And I think that all comes down to the word care. I think that a customer service person needs to genuinely care for the person that they are serving at that moment. Mm-hmm. And if it's disingenuous, you know it.
Absolutely, you know it. Absolutely. You know it. And BMW took part in the Disney Institute. Once again, they must have felt that they had wonderful cars, but the experience that they were having at a dealership, the experience that the dealers were having with corporate, something was amiss there. I use Chick-fil-A as an example. Chick-fil-A, certainly during COVID, has changed quite a bit. Mm. But the kids who are working there, and they're all young kids, mm-hmm. they are learning a skill set. It's not the chicken sandwich that they're selling. It is learning to meet those people who are going through the drive-thrus expectations. It's to make everyone feel special. Mm-hmm. And it's to recognize there is an approach and a decorum and an expectation of the employee. I think this is one of the areas that we're going to have to reinvest in, mm-hmm. because I think we're missing it right now.
I agree.
I think this is an area that, you know, you could say that it's not real in the sense that, yes, Disney is not real, mm-hmm. but if everywhere worked on their customer experience, like Disney has worked on their customer experience, the world would certainly be much kinder.
For sure.
And it certainly would be one that's more pleasant. And we're kind of losing some of that pleasantness.
And right that now. Empathy, that feeling that I am helping you because I want to, because I care about you. Yeah. Right now, at this moment, you are the most important person in the world. I think, of course, back to Mr. Rogers. Rogers was genuinely good at caring.
Sure.
Everybody that has had a conversation with Fred Rogers said, I felt like I was the only person in the universe. He was focused on me. There's so many customer service people that are so distracted by the job,
sure.
that they are not able to get to the level where they can give that level of care.
Sure. Did you ever hear about the person who went to the psychiatrist and he was addressing about narcissism? And he said, but what does that have to do with me?
Customer service is something that we can train people in, and the book like this, where we think about the realities of our situation, is kind of important.
Well, and it's important for employers or people who also have public-facing companies, mm-hmm. to recognize through this book the care that was put in to thinking about how they want the company story. You can't assume that everybody knows your company's story. Mm-hmm. You can't assume that everyone knows the right way to address the public. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's a reality of what goes on behind the cast, and there is what the public should experience. You know, it may be put together with duct tape in the back, but we don't want the client to experience that.
Right.
Okay. That may have been the temporary solution that we made at the time to get us through this period of moments. Mm-hmm. But the reality is we need, the public needs to have the confidence that the rides are safe,
correct.
That the food is fresh, that their needs are being taken into consideration. And once again, the idea is to exceed those mm-hmm. expectations. We'll address the other stuff. In a private situation, we understand things are going on in everyone's lives. Mm-hmm. So there's one of the other challenges that we have is that, you know, how do you do that but also meet the needs of your employees mm-hmm. or meet the needs of the people around you? This is a incredibly thoughtful book. This is an incredibly powerful way to address those people around us. It can make your life better. It can make your family better. It is certainly worthy of your time. It doesn't take a long time to read this book. Okay. But I do think that this is an area that we're going to have to spend a lot of time and focus on for a while, because we are seeing the byproduct of a time where kind of society fell apart a little bit.
I agree. That is Be Our Guest, Perfecting the Art of Customer Service by Theodore Kinney.
Scroll with it.
brings us to our scroll with it. Let's talk about silly things. Let's talk about silly things today, Chip.
Steve, let's just say that May the 4th is coming up.
Yes, May the 4th be with you. I still find that funny. After all the years that we've celebrated Star Wars on May the 4th, I still find it joyous.
Well, Steve, that's not the only thing we're going to find joyous this week, because Carrie Fisher, her Force ghost, will be honored this week.
And will it be a swearing, flicking people off Force ghost? Yes. Yes, it will.
Anyway, she's going to finally get her star.
On the Hollywood Walk of Fame, right there with all of the other famous people. It's amazing to me that she didn't have a star up until this point. She was a huge part of Hollywood, doing so much writing and punching up scripts throughout her career.
Absolutely. I mean, she had a career afterwards. In fact, her specialty was correcting dialogue, making it natural.
After George Lucas wrote it.
Well, you can write this, Steve.
Yeah, but okay. You can't say it.
Well, the grand part about this is that she's going to be, notice, she's going to be right around the corner from Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford and her mother, Debbie Reynolds. And so she is going to be honored. And, you know, I think the way this works is you either pay for it or you have a group of fans pay for it.
Correct.
And they put you down.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. You're going to have Carrie Fisher.
On May the 4th.
And that's right, the princess.
That's awesome.
So Steve, one of the things that we have addressed many times is the challenge of making sure that your product gets in front of your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've seen for a lot of professional sports teams is to put their product behind a paywall.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going to buy the Marquee app so that you can watch the Chicago Cubs play.
But with the Marquee for the Chicago Cubs, you can't even pay to see those games. Your cable provider has to pay. You can't buy into that paywall.
And that's very different than the old days where on WTBS they had the Atlanta Braves playing, which if you're in the South, I mean, almost everyone is an Atlanta Braves fan.
Mm-hmm.
If you're up in the Midwest and you have access to WGN, I mean, think about how powerful the Chicago Cubs are, because people would get home from school, they'd flip on the television, and what? The Cubs are playing.
And that was across the country. Those super stations that made those brands across the country, now we're behind these paywalls where we are so compartmentalized, I'm not watching the same things you're watching.
So this has been addressed by the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
So down in Phoenix, they have chosen, because they were with a service that filed bankruptcy, and the idea is where they're going to show their games. They've chose to use terrestrial television.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to use a regular television over the air to be able to watch the Phoenix Suns play. Once again, you could sell advertisements like they used to do, and maybe you can pay for it and get the revenue that you generated. That is called advertising of your product.
Yes.
And build your brand,
mm-hmm.
which the Phoenix Sun wants to do. But also, they're also using, was it Kiss Me? Which is a sort of a modern service where during the time that you're watching it, they can cross promote. Hey, buy a jersey. Hey, you know, I've got other fans that like these uniforms. Let's talk about those uniforms. Basically, kind of use technology to create the engagement that the Suns want.
To build that community of fans. That is so important. That community involvement is so important. We learned that in Chicago with the Chicago Blackhawks. When old man Wirtz said, no, I'm not going to broadcast these games. You have to buy a ticket and come to watch these games. I did not go watch these games.
And that hurt the NHL?
Yes.
Because Chicago is one of the markets. And it wasn't until he passed away and passed to his son that they were able to use the Chicago market the way the Chicago market should be used. This hurt the NHL, the entire league, as well as it hurt the Blackhawks, the franchise.
Until they were able to open it up, and then that franchise of the Chicago Blackhawks really bolstered the whole NHL.
And we just want to go ahead and say this. The Carolina Hurricanes, Steve, they're still in the playoffs.
That's sports.
Steve Austin. Exactly. And Jordy, from Star Trek. Yes.
I was thinking more like Cyborg.
Well, Cyborg, yeah. Well, he doesn't have computer eyes, Steve.
He's got one computer eye. Well, that is what we're talking about right now.
Bionic eyes that could restore vision.
I am ready for my cyborg implants. I want to be better. We have the technology. We can rebuild me.
Well, and it seems like that back in November 21st, there was a paper that was released that talked about this.
Okay.
They are implanting those. They're testing them out right now. They were just talking about how good they could be. And this is for a person who cannot see. You implant an eye. They're saying that it has about 8 times the resolution of an iPhone 13. That's the latest model of iPhone. That is the level that a person who has this implanted and it's successful will be able to see.
Wow.
Steve, the future is here.
It is. And certainly there's some caveats to any of this technology, but I am excited to help those people that we now have the technology to help. What we've been doing with limbs and bionics there and adding that to our senses, I'm on board with this.
So Steve, I think that we need to celebrate this, and probably we need to celebrate this by honoring a battle that happened a long time ago that wasn't very important
in
Mexico.
In a galaxy far, far away? Oh, no, in Mexico. Gotcha.
And so I think we should all get together and have margaritas and chips and salsa.
It is a busy week for sure. It is May the 4th on Thursday. It is Cinco de Mayo on Friday. And then it is Free Comic Book Day on Saturday.
Well, you got some reading material to get through to.
I'm ready. I will celebrate anything. You know that. I will celebrate anything. But those 3 dates are definitely on my calendar this week.
Well, it's a busy, busy week. Sounds like a great time. Hopefully we survive.
Yeah, and do some customer service while we're doing it. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. It's been great having you back in the studio. We'll see you back on the long distance version of the show next week. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're still on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflaw.
We're customer service. See you in the future. We're still on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on... Stop.
Okay.
That's all I can hear.
Now you can type.